everybody. I'm Scott, and welcome to the Shelfware Podcast. This episode, we're going to talk about The Summer Book by, and I'm going to do my very best with this name, Tuva Jansson. And I'm here with Hannah Edinburgh, who is a co-host of An American's Guide to Bollywood and More is More.
That's right.
Two super fun podcasts. You want to say a few words about those really quick before we move on? American's Guide to Bollywood. What's going on there?
Yeah, so An American's Guide to Bollywood is me and my sister talking about Indian movies. And they're Indian movies that we really like, or sometimes they're just important. And so we watch them and talk about them. But sort of trying to encourage Americans to find them to be more accessible than they might if they just sat down and watched them without anything.
Fantastic.
And More is More is just us talking about bad movies.
in a hilarious way, I might say. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I have you and your family to thank for all the Indian movies I've seen in my whole life. So thank you
welcome.
Very much.
You're very welcome.
And they're very good. So you brought us The Summer Book. What made you do that?
So I was going through the books that I've read in the last few years, scrolling through Goodreads. And that's one that I just wish more people knew about.
Hmm.
I don't think it's very well known, but it's not very long. It's a bunch of vignettes, and it's really, I mean, I want to say that it's sweet, but it's more than that. A lot of it is a little bit sad. And more than anything, it's just really real.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful and insightful.
Those are perfect words. Beautiful and insightful. And what it's about is Sophia and her grandmother spending the summer on an island. And that's like the whole plot. You know, if you say it's a plot, there's not really a plot. Like you said, it's vignettes. It's like 20 or so little pieces of life that are like poetry almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Sophia is about 6, and this is one of those really small islands in Finland. And so there's people on it, but not very many.
Mm, yeah.
And it's just this, it was 72, I think, when she published this.
Yep, I think you're right. I did look that up as well. 1972.
Yeah.
And she's famous for some kids' books. And this is not a kid's book, I wouldn't say. Not that a kid couldn't read it. I just don't think that's her target. But
no, they might think it was boring, but even if they didn't, they wouldn't understand it the way that I think it's supposed to be understood. It's just one of those things that's so frustrating to hear when you are a kid, which is like, oh, you won't understand it because you haven't lived enough, but it's true.
Yeah, and I agree with that. It's like she's looking back at childhood. And that's what she's portraying, I think. Some of these things that are observations that you can only see later, you know.
Yeah.
For sure. But her famous ones are, they're called the Moomin or Moomin Troll. Mm-hmm. Hippopotamus-like things. So
yeah.
I definitely am going to find some of those and watch them.
I know.
Or read them.
Yeah. Yeah, they look really cute. I think I had heard of them, but I had never read any. But they're pretty famous, and they've been translated for a long time, I think.
Yeah, I've heard the same. Yeah, and I hadn't run across them, so. But yeah, I definitely want to take a look.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this isn't really the type of book to really worry about spoilers with. But, you know, for those of you who are concerned about that, you know, I think we definitely want to talk some about this and read a little bit of it and stuff as we move on. But really, we've described the book as well as I think we can. Do you have anything else you would say in description before we would talk about some details?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so yeah, it's really a kid and her grandmother on an island experiencing life. And that's what that is. So, but yeah, so the very first thing is called the morning swim. And it sets the tone for the whole thing, I felt, you know, because I read it and it was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Because what it is Sophia, little Sophia, it says, is just, you know, tooling around this island, and it does a little bit of a description, but in the description, I mean, just like in a sentence, it talks about granite, it talks about moss, it talks about crevices. You know, I'm looking at the sentence here, talking about colors and a rainforest of lush leaves and flowers. It actually says evil leaves and vegetation. I mean, this stuff is throughout the whole thing. There's, I remember when I was reading it, and there's so much talk about trees, and I know that you, trees are your living, right? And yeah. I just thought, wow, I wonder if this is one of the things she loves about it. And I'm guessing it is.
It is.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Sophia is looking for her grandma's teeth. In that setting, yes. Right? So you're like, nature, 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 rocks, cracks, moss, and teeth. You know?
Yep.
And that's this book.
Yeah.
Yep.
It is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, grandma being, who never gets a name other than grandmother. She's angry that she can't find them and she can't really bend over and look for them because her legs are hurting. And it's just really honest about what life is like at different stages and what people are like. Because you'd like to think that you don't get angry about stuff, but you always do.
Mm-hmm.
And grandmother gets angry sometimes and she loses her temper with Sophia and she'll yell at her. Not a lot. And sometimes she's really patient and really smart with how she deals with her.
For sure.
And sometimes Sophia is like that. And then sometimes Sophia yells and gets upset. And that's the alternation and having the facets to both of their characters is part of what makes it so real.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like, so in this part, you know, she's looking for the teeth. So it says, she dived beneath the flowering roof of the garden and crept among the green stalks and stems. It was pretty and mysterious down on the soft black earth. And there were the teeth, white and pink, a whole mouthful of old teeth. I've got them, the child cried and stood up. Put them in. And then grandmother says, but you can't watch, grandmother said. That's private. You know, and so
yes.
in that tiny space, I'm feeling a kid, you know, diving beneath the flowering roof of the garden, right? Creeping among these green stalks. It was pretty mysterious. And then there's these teeth in stark contrast. And then the victory of finding them. And then grandma, who's embarrassed to put them in front of anybody. Right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say in her embarrassment, right? But it's like, well, as an adult, you know, you kind of like, yeah, there's things that you don't want people to watch.
Yeah,
taking out your
exactly.
retainer or whatever it might be. Because, you know, it's like, yeah. That's kind of gross. I don't want to do it, you know. And but that illustrates exactly what you said. It's like grandmother is grandma and the kid is a perfect kid. And the whole book is full of this stuff.
Yeah, it really is. And she's so good at portraying the different stages of life.
Mm.
And I think reading this at different times, you would get very different things out of it. So if you have kids, I think you see yourself, but also your kids in Sophia. And if you're younger, you might see some of yourself, but probably a lot of older people that you know, you would relate to grandmother. And then the older you get, the more you realize that grandmother is just a person, which I think is also part of the theme of this book, that grandmothers are just people.
Very true, yeah.
Because it's hard to think of them that way.
It is. You know, and if you're a kid, you know, why would grandma not want to put these in front of me? I want to watch, you know, and Sophia even says that. I want to watch that, you know, and it's perfectly natural for a kid to say that. I don't understand why you wouldn't do that. Yeah. It's great, you know, and just these moments, you know, so good.
Yeah.
And I like the pretty and mysterious too. That kind of is a description of the book as well.
Yeah, it is. Especially because life on this island is so amazing. It's so different than anything that we have, I think, in the U.S. And
yeah, I think so too.
It's also different than what it would be now, even on the same island, because it's been 50 years.
So this is a real island, I take it? Something that actually exists, you know? So you'd think, you know, at least the position of it, they said it's in Finland, I think. And is that, I can't remember where I got that from, if it was actually written somewhere here or in the introduction or something.
I think they imply that it was in Finland. So I know that Janssen was a Swedish-speaking minority in Finland. And grandmother talks about her childhood in Sweden, but she talks about it as a different country. So I think that it's mirroring Janssen's heritage, as she's from Sweden, but they live in Finland now.
Gotcha. Yeah. And we didn't mention, probably it's important to mention, that this is translated from Swedish. So yes. This one by Thomas Teal is the one that we both read.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it was updated recently.
Yeah. So he did a wonderful job. You know, makes me want to read Swedish.
Yeah.
But he did a great job. You know, I'm assuming this is mirroring somehow what it feels like in Swedish, but because it is so odd, it's not typical at all.
No, and there's such an emphasis on now in translation on capturing the spirit of things as well. That I think, he just did such a good job.
For sure. And in the second one, you know, I'm not going to walk through this whole book, but in the second one, it's like the very second sentence of the second vignette. The vignette is called Moonlight. It says, Sophia woke up and remembered that they had come back to the island and that she had a bed to herself because her mother was dead.
Yes.
And that is the only time I think that that's mentioned, unless I missed it.
No, I think that is the only time.
Yeah, so it is, that's it. So, yeah, you wonder if that has affected the character of Sophia throughout the whole book, or was she just explaining why her mom's not around?
Yeah, I think it does. But I just remembered there is another point at which she sort of obliquely refers to it. When she is pretending with grandmother and she says, you'll be my mom and I'll call you mama. And she says, I'm only your father's mama.
Mm.
And then Sophia gets mad and yells and says, why does everybody else get to say mama and except for me?
Yes, I do remember that.
So it's sort of... I think it is implying that, you know, she's dealing with this in the way that a 6-year-old would, which is not going to be thinking about it a whole bunch.
Sure.
And Janssen wrote this book after her mother died.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think that, I mean, that's a huge thing thematically with. And she was almost 60.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. You know, I was kind of calculating that in my head here. So, yes, from 72, she was born in 1914, and this was published in 72.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So she could have been a grandmother.
Right.
So Sophia was dealing with the loss of her mother, which Janssen was, and she's closer to grandmother's age, but she's dealing with a lot of the age-related issues that grandmother is, thinking about her past and trying to find meaning in life now, dealing with your family more and more, just kind of feeling like you're a fixture. They don't have to tell you things that are happening.
Wow. Yeah. How interesting to have written this at about age 58. That's fascinating. I mean, as an adult, but you know, at that time in your life, you know, to be looking through this and writing this way is really something.
Yeah, it really is, especially because she was so good at writing Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
She captured so much the capricious moods of children, especially when they're not. It's funny because Sophia has the kind of life on this island that all the modern parenting books want you to give your kids, which you can't hear. They're like, let them run around and blah, 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 and be easy and explore stuff and all the stuff that, like, if you really did it in your city, might get CPS called on you.
Right, right.
But yeah. She has really free rein, and grandmother doesn't try to control her. She sometimes tries to guide her away from things that she knows will make her unhappy, but she usually can't, and she accepts that and understands it.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think that was another big theme, is that people just have to make their own mistakes. And it doesn't matter that you can see that something is going wrong for them, or they're making choices that are not going to make them happy. You can't tell people that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of a thing I think about all the time, you know, in education. It's like how we beat that out of people, you know. When you make people afraid to be wrong, I mean, you're just killing creativity.
It's so true.
Yeah, and I just try and create a system where people can do that, you know. They need to be able to do that. They need to be able to be wrong.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, fascinating though. But yeah, you're right. She catches that. I agree with you that's kind of one of the things that she's showing with this.
Yeah.
Letting them run. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite stories was the one where they raise the kitten.
Oh, yes.
And he's kind of a wildcat.
It's funny about love, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. And Sophia just wants to love this cat and hug him and cuddle with him. And he doesn't want to do that. I think she says that he gets flattened by hugs and carried around, and then he'll just wait until it's done and go hunt birds. That's all he wants to do. And he wants to sleep in the box where the dirty dishes are. And until it gets too full and he starts howling and someone has to do the dishes. And finally, they trade with another family who brought their cuddly sweet cat.
Named Fluff.
And
yep.
Fluff, exactly. Moppy gets sent away for Fluff. And eventually, Sophia just hates the new cat because it won't do anything. It won't be a cat. And
yeah, it's like Fluff is, you know, sleeping right against her cheek, and you know, you're thinking, isn't that what she wanted? No, that's not what she wanted. She got what she wanted, and it wasn't what she wanted.
Yeah, she tells grandmother, we have to trade cats again. And she says, you know how it's going to be. And she says, I know it's going to be horrible, but I love Moppy.
That's so great. It's so great. I mean, it's so true. It just is, you know. I've had pets, you know, but people too, you know, you just have these people, you know, gosh, you know, life would be so much better. And then if they move on or something like that, you're like, oh man, you know, I have this hole in my life right now.
Exactly.
But yeah. But it's so, just so true. Yeah. And then, you know, so besides Sophia and grandma, you know, I'd love to return for a minute to nature, which I think is a huge thing. I loved this line where it's talking about actually a forest, you know, so on the outside of the line of the island, beyond the bare rock, there was a stand of dead forest, it says. And it says, it had shaped itself with slow and laborious care And the balance between survival and extinction was so delicate that even the smallest change was unthinkable. I just love that so very much.
Me too.
It's incredible. Yeah, so it's just this, you know, I can feel that. And there is just so much of that in nature, isn't it? You know, and then there is that idea too, you know. We talked a little bit about our respective colleges right before this, you know. And it has something to do, you know, this place that you're growing up in. Mm-hmm. It is delicate. And when you leave, that place really doesn't exist anymore. When you come back, it's not the same. Because it was delicate and it changed when you moved.
Yeah. Right? And the colleges are trying to survive.
Right. Yeah. So they're changing all the time too. But even if, let's say, no buildings were built, it would still not be what you left. Because exactly. it was the people that were there. The whole ecosystem when you were there is what you remember, hopefully fondly. And then, but when you leave, it's so delicate that the smallest change just changes it all. And
so true.
Yeah. Yeah. You have these peak times in life, you know, that are those times, you know, and then, you know, but your life is never static. It's changing all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's nature, right?
Oh gosh. Yeah, it is. And they talk about even as something will change in order to stay the same. They talk about that in the book, like the rose rugosa
bush. Yes. I remember that distinctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That dies every 7 years from salt water and exposure, but her children pop up, so it doesn't matter. She really just moved a little bit.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. You know, just these things that you read them and you stop. At least, I mean, this is not a book to be rushed through. It's like you read it and you just like, wow, you know, that is something. And it's just full of those things. It's just full of those things.
Yeah, it's so funny because I was reading it for this and I was, you know, every story I was like, oh, we could read this or we could read this. But it's every single thing is like that.
Yeah,
everything
for sure.
is so good.
Yeah.
And like it's also hard to cut anything out because it flows so well and it's like real life. There isn't like a snappy ending.
Right. Yeah. And there's not a plot, but you're right. There is just something connecting it all, and it does need to be in this order, doesn't it? Now that I think about it, especially, well, the beginning and the end, you know, but mm-hmm. if I was to read it again, which I'm going to, I read it on Kindle and I've got a hard copy coming because it needs to go on the pool room shelf.
yes.
I would like to read it and notice how it progresses to the end. And see kind of, you know, how that happened because it's remarkable. You know, it feels like it's not happening, which is kind of what life feels like, really. It's just moving forward, you know, and you don't know that you're progressing towards anything specific. You're just moving.
It's almost a surprise when the book ends.
It is. I would agree with that really, really a lot. You know, suddenly they're getting ready to leave and you're like, wow, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is a surprise. How about Berenice? That's something that I highlighted.
I was just thinking about her.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So it's just like, you know, one summer Sophia had a guest of her own, her first friend come to visit. So here comes Berenice. I've decided to be her protector.
I know. Mm-hmm. And she's afraid of everything. And all Sophia really liked about her was her beautiful curly hair. And then she came to this island where everything is the way it is. And everybody who's there knows everything about it. And she's the only one who doesn't. And for someone who's afraid of everything, that's especially hard.
Oh, that's that's so good. And that exact thing is addressed elsewhere in the book, too, where... there was a line, something about how strange it is to come to an island if you're an outsider, because everybody has their place and you're coming in without a place. Yeah. And that's exactly what she's doing
that way. And they don't even notice. And that's why grandmother is the only one who understands her.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess grandmother was in that position when she came.
Right. She came from somewhere else too. I would say the same is true of a small town, if it's small enough.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. So Pipson is what her name is, right? And then it says grandmother proposed that they call the child Berenice. But only within the society, of course.
Yeah, that's right. It didn't sound fancy enough.
Yes, yes. And I love, let's see. Sophia comes running and she says, "She's driving me crazy," she whispered, talking to her grandmother. "She won't learn to row because she's scared to go out in the boat. She says the water's too cold. What are we going to do with Berenice?" And then it says, "They held a short meeting on the subject without deciding anything for the time being." Sophia rushed out again. I mean, that couldn't be better put. It was just like, love it. Yep.
They're constantly having little meetings trying to manage her. And in the end, nothing works because, you know, you can't manage a person.
Mm-hmm.
And grandmother has to just sort of get down on her level and start pretending with her.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And she does it often.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in this same section, another piece I highlighted that I loved. Underneath the guest room, they stored lumber, empty cartons, picks and shovels, cans of coal tar, gasoline, and wood preservative, plus some aging bait boxes and other odds and ends still too good to be thrown away. In other words, the guest room was a very pleasant place, quite distinct from the rest of the house. The details don't really matter, it says. Love it. Yeah, because I mean, that's a kid thing right there.
Exactly.
A room full of stuff. Awesome.
It was great.
No matter what that stuff
was in it.
Yep.
Yeah.
The details don't matter. I remember when my kids were young enough, you know, you'd have Christmas and you'd get them something and they'd open the box. And if the box was interesting enough, they'd play with the box.
Yeah, they didn't care what was in it.
Exactly. But yeah, but poor Berenice was afraid of everything.
She really was.
Yep.
I was really struck by how she described being the aging person in the family in The Visitor, when her friend, who's, I guess, actually 10 years younger than her, but her old friend comes to visit. I guess he comes like once a year and always brings her sherry. And she's like, "Oh, I wish I had told him a long time ago that I don't like sherry, but it's too late now."
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they're talking about his boat that he came in.
Uh-huh.
"It isn't my boat," he said. "I didn't think it was. It has a hogged keel, too. Did you borrow it?" "I just took it," Werner said. "I took it and drove off. It's very unpleasant to have them worry about you all the time." "But you're only 75, said grandmother in astonishment. "Surely you can do what you like." "It's not that easy," Werner replied. "You have to be considerate. They do have a certain responsibility for you, after all. And when you get right down to it, you're mostly just in the way."
"Hmm.
Sometimes I get very depressed," Werner said. "You said a person shouldn't talk about the things that matter most, but here I am doing it anyway." And then later they're talking about, you know, they're always saying, "You need a hobby. You have to find a hobby, collect things, garden. But as soon as somebody tells you to do it, you don't want to do it." And he says, "I probably would have gardened, except that they said I should do it, and now I'm not going to."
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
But yeah.
Yeah, powerful. Just
becoming that person that other people feel like they need to find things for you to do and manage your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can't really do anything useful anymore. Everyone just worries about you.
Yeah. And that line, "And when you get right down to it, you're mostly just in the way," is just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And wow, does she get this right? I mean, it's, again, you know, 6-year-old and an 85-year-old for grandma. It's just like two ends of a humanity.
Exactly. Yeah, they're both left out in so many ways and both not considered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they both can understand. I mean, you know, they're both fully capable of being included if you just do it.
Yeah, right. You bet. Just hard to find your way.
And even though grandmother has been dealing with this feeling and problem in her own family, she, as Werner leaves, she says, "And try to think of some way to outwit them." "Who's he going to outwit?" Sophia asked. "Relatives," grandmother said. "Nasty relatives. They tell him what to do without asking him what he wants, and so there's nothing at all he really does want."
Wow.
"How awful," Sophia cried. "That would never happen with us." No, never, grandmother said.
Yes. If only things stayed the same.
Yeah.
But we talked about that earlier, right? It doesn't stay the same, does it?
No.
Wow. Yep. Powerful. I mean, yeah, it's hard to, it's just ineffable. You know, this is like a book for the rest of your life. Seriously.
It really is.
It is.
Yeah. And it's so short. You can read it in a few hours. I mean, it's really amazing. And reading it again, I realized I read it way too fast the first time. And even though you can read it in a few hours, you should probably spread it out over
just read one of these or two. That's what I'm going to do. Because I definitely read it too quickly. But, you know, you have to pause. You know, there were times where I just stopped and I was just like, wow. You know, there's something going on here that's really something, you know, and then I'd back up a little bit and read it again. And you're like, wow, you know, that's amazing.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't even know if she's written anything else. Do you know, other than the Moomin stuff?
Is she a
novelist that's got a few out there or something?
I feel like, let's see.
So it says here, so after she wrote a book called Moomin Valley in November, Janssen stopped writing about Moomins and started writing for adults. Her first foray was called Bildhagaren's Daughter, which is Sculptor's Daughter, a semi-autobiographical novel published in 1968. After that, she wrote five more novels, including the summer book, and five collections of short stories. Wow, so yeah, I've got some stuff to find.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm going to poke around with some of that.
I'm so glad that Thomas Teal had translated at least this. Hopefully he's translated some of her other stuff too.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah, I wonder.
I feel like a lot of times they get a hold of something like that and then they end up going through at least the best ones of their work. I know that happened with Sigrid Undset, who wrote Kristin Lovren's Daughter.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
There was a really good translator who got a hold of that book and is sort of going through some of her other stuff.
Oh, nice.
Because the really old translation is a little bit inaccessible.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay,
that's
cool.
Really great.
Yeah, so I just looked up Thomas Teal. He's done four of her books, it looks like. There's one called Fair Play. There's one called A True Deceiver. And there's one called The Woman Who Borrowed Memories, Selected Stories.
Hmm.
So, yep, I'll be finding some of those for sure. After I reread this, of course. So, yeah, it's interesting that Scandinavian authors over the past, I don't know, what, 10, 15 years seem to be very popular in the United States.
Yes.
You know, with the dragon, what was that one? The dragon tattoo?
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't Let the Right One In Scandinavian? Did you ever see that movie?
I did see that movie.
So there's a Scandinavian version and an American version, I think, with Chloe Moretz or something.
Yeah, Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yeah, the Scandinavian one is the one I liked most.
Yeah, I didn't see the American one. I saw the Scandinavian one. And I actually read another, I didn't read that book by John Lind. twist, but I did read another book by him.
Oh, how was that?
It was good. It was weird. Mm-hmm. It was horror, obviously. That's all he writes. Yeah, it was really, the explanation for everything was really strange, but it was really interesting. Hmm. So I think it's really, he's really hit or miss with his books.
Okay. Yeah.
From what I've read. So, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if Let the Right One In is worth a read. The movie was special, I think.
I don't know what you would get out of it that wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
That's kind of a dumb thing to say about movies, but
yeah. So cool. So what's your next? Do you know the subject of your next episode of American's Guide to Bollywood?
It's the last in our revenge series.
Ah, the revenge series. Are there any type of pecs or abs anywhere in these?
Yes, but only very briefly. It's a short movie. It's only 2 hours.
Okay.
So.
Not enough time for that.
Yeah. Just a quick clip of someone running down the hall.
I love it. The revenge series. The revenge series. What about, I need to look this up. I think you guys talked about this. The one with the fly where the guy turns into a fly. There's a revenge one. Ega, that's it. Yes. I watched that one.
Yeah. That's a really good one.
It is really good. And that's a revenge story. So you might need to,
absolutely,
if you haven't talked about that, you need to extend your series.
Yes, we did talk about that.
Good, okay.
Remember when?
That's probably when I said I gotta go watch it. So
exactly. if you've ever wanted a montage of a fly getting buff, I've got the movie for you.
Yep. I love it. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you so much for
thoroughly
having
enjoyed
me.
You. So yeah, you're wonderful. So. I hope you have a great evening.
You too.
Thanks for listening, everybody.